Thanks for joining the podcast with Tamara Gondor. Conversations with everyday innovators that reject status quo, think differently, and make a positive difference in their world. Listen in so you can ignite innovation, influence others, and make an impact too. And now your host, CrossFit addict, knee-high sock lover, and according to her kids, average cook, Tamara Gondor.
Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to today's episode. I am once again just so excited about my guest. He has done some really interesting things of transforming what other people saw as nothing into something pretty amazing and has built a business and a life around that. So I'm pretty excited to have him on the podcast and to talk to him about it. So, Randy, welcome to the show. Tell the world a little bit about who you are and the business that you are in.
All right. I am Dr. Randy Pierce. I'm an analytical sports and fitness doctor, and I run a boxing academy. I know this kind of seemed like they contradict each other, but it's a really good story that I'd like to kind of share with you about how I got into healthcare and boxing.
Let's just go there and hear it. Tell us the story.
Well, I was in chiropractic school in Atlanta many, many years ago, and one of the trainers was a boxer. He actually used to run with Muhammad Ali when he lived in New York. And he said, hey, I know about you. I heard about you. You go to the chiropractic school. Well, I have some issues with my neck and things like that. Can you help me? And I said, well, I was still in school, but I'm sure I could do something. And he's like, well, I don't have a lot of money, but I can teach you boxing. And at the time, I didn't think much of it. I did martial arts for most of my life, but I figured if that's what he has in trade, why not? And it was an eye-opening experience. I learned a lot about myself through boxing. And it was not about what a lot of people think as far as getting out some anxiety and frustration and things like that. And it was about self-control and harmony and peace.
What do you think you learned about yourself or even your clients learn about themselves when they start boxing?
How little self-control we actually have. how simple something looks and how difficult it is to actually bring to, you know, to fruition. And so at the time I was doing triathlons. So swimming, biking, running, I was in really good shape. But it's kind of, you know, one speed. It's very linear. It's a very linear sport. You know, you swim one direction, bike, and then run. With boxing, it was left side, right side, upper body, lower body, and thinking on the fly and making adjustments. That was a huge thing, making adjustments constantly.
It seems to me that there's a lot of life lessons that come out of boxing. Now, I don't know in my audience who knows this or doesn't know this. Randy, you know this because I have come to you for boxing lessons through the academy. That I used to box a lot, actually, and as a teenager. And it's actually one of the things that put me back on a good path. Let's just say I was headed down some bad decision-making paths. And boxing and kickboxing, actually martial arts overall, is what turned it around for me. So I have a big place in my heart for boxing overall. But you made the point that, you know, adjustments, upper body, lower body, it seems to me that something like boxing shows you what it takes to really accomplish something versus, you know, something that's really just more like, I think A, I do B, because it's not really how it works. And to your point with the triathlons, now you have an opponent. So I think A and I do B, but they do L. And I'm like, whoa, that's not what I was expecting.
Very true. As Mike Tyson once said, everyone's got a plan until they've been punched in the mouth.
One of my favorite quotes in the world.
And it's so true. It's so true. And that was the thing I learned. I played soccer as a kid. And so you have a team. You have 10 other players around you helping you out. You have substitutions. And with boxing, there are no substitutions. Both opponents get 3 minutes. You know, there's no timeout. There's no substitution. And you have to, you know, you get punched in the mouth and you have to make those adjustments. And that's, you know, happens in life. You can't just stop when something bad happens and just kind of think about what just happened because you just got hit 3 more times.
But there's two things that you said in there that I want to call out for all our listeners because I think they're really important life lessons. You said everybody has 3 minutes in the ring. And I think that's a little bit like life. Don't you think that we're all on the playing field and it's a matter of what we do with our time. And I'm not saying that it's harder for some to get on the playing field than others. I really do think it is. But once we're there, we all have our 3 minutes. And it's what you do with that time that really matters, don't you think?
Very much so. I think it's very important that you have a plan and you have to execute that plan. And when something happens that doesn't quite go to plan, you can't just scrap the whole plan. You just need to make adjustments to that plan. There are just certain things that you need to make adjustments on and then do the next right thing and just kind of stay focused at that point. But when it comes down to it, it's you got to also look at your training. Did you really train hard enough? Did you really do all the things as part of your plan? And if not, then it kind of shows and you have no one to blame but yourself.
I have two just very quick stories I want to share with you on that. One is I used to do a lot of Tough Mudders, you know, the obstacle course racing 12 miles. And I'll never forget, I was one in Lake Tahoe, and about 3 miles in, there was a guy next to me who was dying. Like he really, and this was 3 miles in, we had another 10 miles to go and another 20 obstacles to go, whatever it was. And I turned to him and I said, "Are you okay?" And he looked at me and he said, "I really should have trained." That's all he said. And then he just left the course. I was like, whoa. So to your point, right? Like he got 3 miles in. Willpower and whatever you have inside of you can only take you so far if you don't train. And then the other story is, I just wanted to get your perspective on too, is I was doing a presentation for a bunch of senior leadership once in a company I used to work for. And I was doing a presentation of what I wanted. I wanted money. I wanted resources for what I wanted to do. And the person next to me was in the same position. And that person spent months putting this presentation together. I thought I had it in the bag. So I spent maybe 3 days putting my presentation together. Let's just say I did not get the money because I did not train for the moment. And that was a really hard slap across the face for me. But I'm sure you see that all the time with your clients, with health, with life, with boxing, with all of it.
Very much so. And myself included. You know, we all kind of have certain goals and things like that. You know, the new year rolls around and a couple months later, it's March, April, we're upset about we didn't lose the 5 pounds, 10 pounds, 20 pounds, whatever it is, or you know, whatever it is, we want to make that, do that marathon and we want to make a certain time and we don't. You have to look back and go, were you honest? Were you honest with yourself? And most of the times, no. Most of the times, there's more that we could have done.
Yeah.
Just kind of let that slide.
I just think that's such a great lesson in everything that we do in life, because training can look a lot of different ways. I think it could be physical, but it can also be mental. It can be role playing, what questions people are going to ask you. It could be get out and hitting the pavement, kind of whatever it is. I want to ask you, you know, because you, I kind of want this story to set the stage for the rest of the questions I have. You took a space that people saw as a place to dump old boxes and store stuff from 4 Christmases past and a couple of Halloweens, I believe, when I first went in there. And you turn that into something magnificent. Will you share with us that story of seeing the potential in that space, kind of the experience and what it was like to build it and where it is today?
Okay. I've always had boxing equipment. I kind of carried around from place to place and things like that. And I actually had some equipment that I was stored in friends' basements. So I had boxing equipment all over the place, but never in one place, a dedicated space for it. And I was in a facility, a gym that shut down, and I was looking for a place, and I was actually a couple doors down, and I walked in, and they're just giving me a tour of the place. And I was like, well, what is this space back here? It's just furniture. And you could see like a sofa cushion that was ripped up from a cat and just all kinds of just random things. And they're just like, oh, this, it's been this way for about 10 years. And I was like, well, could I clean it out and have the space? And they're like, not a problem. So I just donned coveralls and a respirator because it was just dirt and dust. And this building was built in 1955. They said it hasn't been touched since they moved in, which was about 20 years ago. And so I just went to work and I had some friends that helped out and we, you know, hung drywall, first time I've ever done that, painted concrete, which is a horrible experience because concrete just soaks up paint. So you just keep painting and keep painting and just all kinds of stuff. But it was a space and I just was determined to have my own space, whether it's just going to be for myself or to actually run a business, which I kind of wanted to do because I've helped so many people's mindsets on life and things like that through boxing. So I knew eventually that I would want to turn it into something. To help others.
When you went in there for the first time and they're showing you this space, I'm assuming in kind of a dismissive way, like, oh, that's where we just throw stuff. And like you said, there were old there's old furniture. I think there was like a whole armoire or something in there, like just crazy stuff in there. But they're kind of dismissive, right? Like it's just the back space. Did you instantly see the potential in it? What were your, I'm curious what your initial thoughts were, because I think oftentimes when those type of ideas pop into our head, it's actually very easy for us to dismiss our own ideas too, because the people we're with maybe don't see it the way we see it.
So I immediately saw this as a space. The space was about the right size. I knew I wanted to have a boxing ring. So yes, through all the clutter, I definitely saw that. And I took pictures along the way to kind of show that transformation. But yeah, the hard work. That was just another thing of hard work, you know, just going phases. First of all, I have to clean it out. I have to have this vision of what I want. Is there enough space? And all the equipment that I had, will it fit in this space? And so I just, I saw that beyond the clutter.
Randy, I just love this story because I to me, it is such a great example of turning nothing into something. Or seeing the potential, maybe this is a better way to say it, seeing the potential of something that other people are totally overlooking. It's like the right person in the right space come together. And it's not that they miss it because they're not brilliant or innovative in their own way, but it didn't match for them the way it matched for you. And now, just to jump ahead for a second, that space not only has heavy bags and speed bags and kind of, and rope, right, and all this stuff, but it actually has a full-on ring in it too, like a real ring in it. So it's like a whole real boxing gym. And while that, you know, maybe just sounds like a no big deal to someone listening, the before and after this place are amazing. And again, to me, the story is about how you see something that other people don't see, but then to what you just said, which is so important, which is you then put in the hard work to actually make it happen. And it didn't happen overnight. How long did it take?
It took about 3 months, 3.5 months. And it was just, I'm talking long days of just cleaning things out. I went in with power tools and had to cut some just random lumber just so I can get it in smaller pieces to carry it outside and put into the dumpster. It was nasty. It was a lot of dust and a lot of dirt. And then it go on to the painting. It's really neat because then you hit this transition from you've cleaned everything out and now you can start working on making it look presentable, painting and hanging drywall and things like that. So there's another phase and hanging lights, putting in lights, doing electrical work. And so I have friends that do different aspects of kind of construction. So they came in. So I learned, you know, things, you know, that way as well. And then finally get all the equipment in and kind of start polishing things and making it look nice.
Kind of interesting what you just said, that there's a transition point. I never really thought of it that way, that when you are building something new, and whether that is a physical or a mental kind of idea, whatever it is, the first you have to clean out all the junk and the clutter, like get rid of the past, and then you transition into the new stuff. And I think oftentimes when we have something we want to build, we think, oh, I'm ready, ta-da, but it doesn't really happen that way, does it? Like you have to clear out all that stuff first. You have to like have those long days, and then you get to start to see the vision come to life. But I don't know that you see the vision come to life immediately.
None at all. And what's also interesting is it's a lonely place. There are more people wanting to help hang the heavy bags in the speed bag than wanting to sweep up the dirt and carry out the lumber that had nails in it. That was a lonely time. Now my dog was with me then. Yeah. My dog was with me, and that was pretty much it. But people were just like, let me know when you're ready to paint. Let me know when you're ready to paint the equipment.
You're listening to Conversations with Everyday Innovators on With Tamara Gondor podcast. Let's take a moment to thank our generous partners that make this possible.
I want to take a moment to talk about my friends at Howdy Puppy. Dogs experience all the same problems as humans when it comes to joint pain, anxiety, digestion, and arthritis. A great way to help our four-legged family members with these ailments is with CBD-infused pet treats. Who doesn't like treats? As you longtime listeners know, my Mastiff Zoe is part of my family, but is getting older and has some anxiety issues when strangers come around. Howdy Puppy CBD Dog Treats has totally changed her disposition. And I know she feels like her young, energetic, confident self when she gets Howdy Puppy CBD Dog Treats. There are many CBD-infused dog treats on the market, but the truth is that many of them are overpriced and ineffective. We've looked at dozens of CBD dog treats and found most of them disappointing. Howdy Puppy is among the best brands in the CBD pet business. They deliver consistent quality, and their treats look and taste amazing, according to our dogs, of course. The company makes CBD dog treats in three flavors: steak, bacon, and cheese rolls. All of Howdy Puppy's CBD treats contain natural ingredients, including high-quality full-spectrum hemp oil, all sourced and made in the USA. Full disclosure, I'm an investor in Howdy Puppy. But before I put my name on the company, I had an independent lab in Denver, Colorado, verify the quality and consistency of their treats. They are truly as advertised. Go online today at howdypuppy.com, link will also be in the show notes, and use promo code Tamara, T-A-M-A-R-A, that's me, to get 20% off the absolute best CBD dog treats on the market. You will not be disappointed. Howdypuppy.com, promo code Tamara. Don't let them suffer needlessly. Let them enjoy life too.
Yeah, people want to help you in the fun times, but not in the maybe always the hard times.
They're already at the finish line, but they're not there at 5 o'clock in the morning at the start.
Yeah. Do you think that's a really kind of profound thought, Randy? Do you think that people don't, I have to imagine people don't realize they do that. They're just excited for the vision part, but aren't even thinking about that part on the front end. Is that like, how did you take that? I guess is my question.
Oh, that was my journey. It was my personal thing. It wasn't anybody else's to take on. I was happy whoever wanted to show up. It was more like having fun and talking.
What an important thing though, to remember that if we're on a journey of creating something new, to remember that, hey, it's okay if it's lonely for a while, and it might be, but that's just part of the journey. I think that's really important for us to remember. So that kind of leads me to my next question, which is what's a big win or something that you're really proud of?
Helping the hopeless. That would be the people that were told from other practitioners they would not run again, they would not play golf again because of their spine or their knees or anything like that. It's just unfortunate that some people take away people's hope and tell them just because they don't have the tools or the skill sets necessary in helping somebody. They just go, this is what I do, I can't fix it, therefore you're going to have to stop.
I know you can't give us confidential information about a specific person, obviously, but can you share with us just an overall example of what that looks like or kind of an experience someone had?
Yes, I had somebody who's, they had a housekeeper, and their housekeeper has really, really bad back, and they had a doctor tell them that they're going to be paralyzed.
Wow.
Paralyzed. And they came to me, and yeah, the situation was not, it was grim. But we did some exercises, some stretches, some specific treatments. And to this day, I just heard from them the other day, they're fine. It's probably been about 10 years. And they're fine, no more issues. And they keep doing the exercises that we prescribed at the time.
What do you think is your client's mindset when they come to you? Because that's got to be... I haven't experienced that yet. I mean, I've had little moments of that, but not like anything major where someone said, you'll never do this again. What is that like, that moment for them? And realizing, I think the second moment there then is realizing it doesn't have to be that way.
Most people come in with the fear of what they can't do, what they don't want to experience, the negative. So there's a lot of, you know, hey, this is why I'm here. My knee hurts, or my back hurts, my neck hurts. And I just want to be able to, you know, go to the gym and work out and not, you know, have this problem again. That's not what they really want to do. They really want to do is go swimming every day or play golf every day. That's what they want to do. But they're starting off from a mindset that is coming from a place of negativity, pain. They just kind of want to get to just okay. And that's, I want to change that mindset. And that's why I've changed it from, you know, pain management, pain prevention management to fitness performance enhancement. Now that we got you out of pain, how can we have you really enjoy those activities that you know, enjoy doing, not just get by?
Do you think that, and I guess my question here really actually applies to the story you're sharing, like specifically about fitness, but also about life. Do you think we have to go through that negative phase first and realize then we can be positive? Or do you think we need that mindset shift from the beginning?
I think that is the critical voice in our head. And that can be changed. It can be one of those things where I had a knee injury a couple of years ago, and you know, it started off with this, I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to get out and ride my bike again. I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to do this. I don't know. It's just so much uncertainty instead of focusing on what can I do now.
So, you know, you had said a couple minutes ago that you love helping. One of the things you're proud of is that you get to help people who maybe have lost a little bit of hope of what they think they're going to be able to do in life, or coming with pain or misalignment or whatever it is. When you think about your business overall and how you positioned your business, how do you see it as different than maybe some of the other options people have out there that clearly are not serving them if they're coming to you?
Right. It's the perspective, for sure. It's what I would see a lot of is since I was, you know, I started working out when I was 15 years old. So I know the gym, I know the exercises and things like that. So when people would come in with an injury, I would say, well, you know, what exercise were you doing? And that's very helpful to kind of know that, because most of the time as a healthcare professional, it's just a matter of, let me do a diagnosis of, you know, what you have, and then we'll treat that. There's no looking into why did this happen in the first place? What got you here? Right. And so that's what I wanted to investigate, is why were they doing a properly good exercise with good form? Why was today that day their back went out or their knees went out? And so for me, it's a matter of finding out what's going on with the body. And what I'd find is that there'd be imbalances in the body. And so it wasn't a bad exercise, and it wasn't that they weren't warmed up properly. It's that they needed to fix some things first before they can go back to that exercise. So that's really what I do, is I investigate a little deeper than other healthcare professionals.
So Randy, you just totally segued into what I wanted to say next, which is so funny. It just fits so perfectly, which is to talk about your innovator style. And you were talking about investigating just now, because your style is tweaker inquisitive, and the inquisitive is all about innovation being in the questions, not the answers, digging, challenging assumptions, pulling about layers. And then the tweaker is all about editing and evolving. So innovation is like one little adjustment away. And both of what you just said is exactly that. It's so fascinating for me to hear. And I've known you for years now. This is the first time you've taken the assessment. So like, it's all kind of coming together for me. But you were just talking about, like, you dig in, you ask these questions, and then you find out all the kind of micro adjustments that people need to make to pull their health together. But I think that that's such a brilliant example of your innovator style, which is ultimately your creative problem solving, your critical thinking, your decision making. And I'm fascinated to see how for you all of that comes together.
I'm definitely a tweaker.
Yeah.
For sure. and the inquisitive part, my mom would have to vouch for, you know, and she was great. She was very big into, if you can't find what you want, learn how to make it.
So, what great advice.
Yes, very much so. So it's funny, because I think about her, and it's like she never really taught something in its entirety, but she kind of gets you on the road. Get you going there. And then you have to ask your own questions and figure, and then you have to tweak something. Oh, okay, that didn't work. And, you know, you just kind of break it down a little bit more. But yeah, that was pretty much it. The whys. It's very easy when you're treating, it's very easy to, you know, do an assessment on somebody and go, this is what you have. This is how we treat it.
Yeah.
And then the people would go off and going, okay, it's better now, but I'm afraid to go back to do those exercises again, because that's what hurt me. But so if I'm able to tell them, hey, look, this is why you got injured, it brings about a certain confidence that people can go back to their activity and not have a fear. So that's when people get injured also, is when they, you know, going down the ski slopes and they're, you know, oh my gosh, I'm going too fast. They get afraid, overcorrect.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, it's funny. You just read my mind. I was just thinking, everyone I know who's gotten hurt skiing or snowboarding, most everybody, it's been because they were tired and they were out one run too late and they were overcompensating and, you know, lazy in their form or kind of whatever. I want to go back real quickly to your mom, just to hold up for a second, because I think your mom might be the best leadership advice I've ever heard, which is like, get somebody on the path, but let them ask the questions and figure out the rest of it along the way. That's what I heard you say about your mom. So kudos, mom, because wow. Like, I think we all need to, as a parent, as a business leader, as a business owner with clients, I need to do a better job of starting them, but not giving them the answer. And my answer may not be the right answer for them anyway. So I love that your mom did that to you, but also taught you that skill. Cause I think you're really good at that too.
It's great. It's funny. I was in a fabric store and there's a woman, I was looking for something. I can't remember what it was. And I was like, where are the scissors? She's like, well, where have you looked?
That's the best question ever though.
Yeah, it is. It's like, where have you looked so far? And I was like, because basically she wasn't quite sure what I was looking for exactly, but at least eliminated some options. If I looked over here, if I looked over there, she'd go, okay, well, we should try over here. So it was really neat. It was a really fun question the way she asked that.
It really makes me think about all the times where I jump to answering where I should ask a question in return. It's so good. So you mentioned you're in a fabric store. And I know that you have a lot of really random hobbies on the side. And you really do, Randy. And you seek out random hobbies, like how to pick locks, I think was one of them. And you know how to sew and leather. And like, you have all these crazy hobbies. So, I mean, they're not crazy, just different, right? They're not in your lane of what you do for work and kind of the day-to-day. And I've always wondered this. What makes you want to seek out all these different random experiences that you do?
Necessity. It's necessity. I got into leather work many years ago. I got a Doberman puppy, and I knew at some point I'd want a really cool leather dog collar, but all I could find are the spiked collars. And, you know, the Doberman's a pretty intimidating looking dog already, so I knew I didn't want that. So I guess I'll figure out how to make it. So I went to a Tandy leather shop and totally intimidated. I'm not an artistic person, but I will put in the time and effort until, you know, I get good at something. So that's how I got into leather work. And then it just turned into belts and wallets and all kinds of things.
But I love that you say it like it's no big deal. Like, it's part of your life that you just, oh, I don't know how to do that. I'm going to go figure that out. And I think that more of us should have more of that in us. And even if it goes nowhere. Like, my knitting's going to go nowhere, but that's not the point. The point is to explore and learn, I think.
Yes. Yes. I don't like the feeling of being helpless. It's like, you know, it's like the people I deal with, you know, don't like to feel, you know, being helpless. I've had that, you know, the first car is a hand-me-down car. And next thing you know, I'm stuck on the side of the road and I just didn't know anything. You know, it could have been, if I knew something about it, I would have, you know, probably not been in that situation. But just the feeling of helplessness and just going, okay, I guess I'll just go without.
All right. Here's my challenge for all of us out there. And I'll add something to my list because I don't think knitting counts with this. That's just so I don't fidget while I sit there. I think we should all take a challenge of having one moment where we don't know what to do. We don't know what we're doing. We're feeling frustrated. We're in that moment. And then to learn that skill, whatever that skill is, or at least go to some YouTube videos, even if you can't learn the whole, like, even if you're not going to learn how to fix your car completely, like, maybe learn how to change your own oil or something like that. So, because what's the worst that could happen, right? You learn something new.
What I found is whenever you go to do something new, you learn about three or four other things that you had no idea that you're going to learn in the process and meet people that you had no idea that you're going to meet.
I love that. Like, I have this visual of you start down this lane and then all these other paths kind of open up from that one lane. You never know. Maybe you'll actually find something you're really passionate about that you didn't even know that was tangential to what you... Before we run out of time, I have a couple last questions for you. But before I do that, I want to loop it back to boxing for a second. So I'm going to allow a moment at my own expense of laughter. So, because Kelly and I, who you know, our mutual friend, we were talking about this before the podcast about your nickname for me when we were boxing. Share it, because I promised Kelly I would let the world hear it because she thought it was so funny. And why you gave me that nickname.
We were sparring. And that's just it. That's the fun thing about sparring. It's one thing is I only spar with my friends. I only spar with loved ones. And sparring is not even a fight. It's a matter of working on things.
And it's very controlled. Like, you're very measured when you spar. Yeah.
So you basically agree on how fast you're going to go, how hard you're going to hit. You're wearing protective equipment. Yeah. And then the fun thing about it is, you know, sparring you, sparring Kelly, sparring some other people, everyone's different. Everyone's got a different style. Everyone's got a different pace, and you have to adapt. You have to make those adjustments. Even though you're super fast on hitting a bag, that person may not, you know, be able to block that fast, and it doesn't work for you. So you have to make that adjustment. But I remember sparring you, and you kind of got in my face. And that's the funny thing about it, because Kelly would run away. You'd get in my face. I'm like, okay, these are two different styles. And you would just stonewall, just like, you just hunker down. I'm like, oh, I guess that approach is not going to work. Let me make some changes here. I don't know what's about to happen. She's like a turtle in its shell and just waiting to come out and snap off a finger. I don't know what's about to happen. I'm scared. Please throw in the towel. I don't want to do this anymore.
That's why I got the nickname Stonewall.
Well, I don't feel safe with Tamara anymore.
I'll just say, in my defense, when I box, so you know, I boxed when I was in late teens, early 20s. That's when I was heavy into it and competing, but there were no girls. So I always had to box guys. And guys were always heavier and taller than me, so they had a longer reach. So my only hope was to get up and on the inside and stay there, because there was no way, if I backed up, they were gonna knock me out. There was no way. Right. I knew that. So I would just stonewall, I would just get up and on the inside, and I would stay there until they like had nothing left to do. And then I would go for it. But it was so funny because I get a little flat footed too. Like, I have a tendency not to be as quick on my feet as I should. But I love what you said about that. But you and I had the reason I bring this up, aside from the laughter, because it's so damn funny to me that like I just have this vision of turning into like a brick wall, just being there. But and Bill said it too. Bill was like, you just wouldn't go away.
And that's the safest place to be in boxing, is close to somebody.
Yeah. But I feel like it's a little bit how I attack life too. But you and I were having this conversation that I just wanted to kind of get your perspective on before we close out, which is, you know, the people I was fighting, the guys, their strength was height, their strength. And I mean, they had all of that against me. And so I had to figure out a way to use their strength against them. And the only way I could do that, right, was getting up on the inside. I had to turn their strength kind of into a weakness. And I think that's part of the thing about boxing that I love, is there's a lot of that type of strategy that I think carries over into life. So I just wanted to get your perspective on that, and to kind of bring it back around to boxing before we close out.
So much more. You have to, you know, just like a lot of things, you have to strategically place yourself. In boxing, you have to understand what the other person's strengths are and understand what your strengths are and try to align them. Try to align your strengths with their weaknesses. And sometimes it's just a matter of, and sometimes it takes time. You know, like in boxing, in actual fights, there are some people who are just really, really strong, but then they get tired at about round four, round five. And so you just kind of have to stay in there and run our stonewall until they get tired. And then that's when you launch your attack and you take advantage. But yeah, sometimes that's the strategic part. And everything's not a knockout punch. You can't waste your own energy. You can't waste your punches. And so, you have to really be smart. Even though it seems like a barbaric sport, you really have to be intelligent about your resources.
And that to me is like everything in life too. Place yourself strategically, like understand your strengths and the people on your playing field strengths. And like, I love all that. It wasn't Ali who said that he used to, I don't remember which fighter it was. He knew he was going to wear him out. So he just wanted to get to round eight or something, because he knew if he could get there, he could win. And I really? Can't remember who he was George fighting.
Probably George Foreman.
Foreman. Yeah.
He did the rope-a-dope.
Yes, right, because he knew.
On the rope, so when he got hit, the ropes would absorb a lot of that power. And George Foreman got tired.
Right.
And then also mentally, he George Foreman wore himself out, because he punched for eight rounds and couldn't hurt him.
Yeah.
Kind of wears on the opponent.
Mentally. When I remember watching that fight, you know, the commentators are talking about how Muhammad Ali is losing, right? He's on the ropes, like he's losing. And afterwards, him talking about, oh no, that was my plan. Like, my plan was to wear him out. I was like, that was genius. Brilliant. Brilliant. All right, Randy, this has been so great. So two last questions for you. One is, as an inquisitive tweaker, what advice do you have for other everyday innovators of all styles? There's a lot of different styles who are looking to do what you did. And I think in this case, really it's, you know, find that lane that is that really works for you, but also, and I keep going back to it, turning something that everybody saw as dead space, but turning it into something amazing.
It's you plan it out. really plan it out, run it past some people. But then you have to execute that plan. There's been for so many years, there's so many great ideas I had in my head. And the worst thing is to see somebody else, that you sit on it for so long that you see somebody else come out with it. And you're like, I thought of that. Yep. Let's talk about high school dances. Oh, I should go ask her to dance. The next thing you know, some other kid walks over. Ah,
because you waited too long.
Waited too long. You have to implement it and then make adjustments. That is the main thing, is have a plan and then you have to execute that plan.
Yeah. You know what? You speak the truth. It's like, you know, there's nothing worse than that moment of, if only I had.
Yes.
It's great advice. My last question for you is a little more personal. What's one thing we'd be surprised to learn about you, which I feel is going to be hard, Randy, because we talked about leather and we talked about boxing. So hit me, give me something.
You know, it's just, it's a constant. There's nothing that I just won't pick up. It's just, I want to learn, continue to learn. And sometimes it's tough to pick up something new. But I think just whatever it may be, like right now I started making beef jerky last week. Got a dehydrator. And just different flavors, marinades. It's the blending of things I really like. The blending of things. Just, if you want something, you know, there's a good chance that you could probably make it better yourself and have it exactly how you want it. It's going to take some steps and some time, but there's a lot of beauty that comes within those steps. Like I said, meeting people, learning new things along the way that you had no idea that you're going to learn.
Don't you find there's a feeling of satisfaction or confidence even that comes in doing it too?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. There's so much. You just, like I said, there's nothing that you can't do. You just don't feel helpless. Whatever you want to do, you're able to do it.
This has been fantastic. Thank you for joining me. I'll be right over for some beef jerky.
Yes, definitely.
Congratulations. By listening to this podcast, you took another step towards becoming an everyday innovator. To leap forward, visit www.gotolaunchstreet.com and take the Innovation Quotient Edge Assessment to discover your unique everyday innovator style and access the Everyday Innovator Digital Magazine for the top tools, insights, and inspiration at your fingertips 24/7. Tamara will be back with another Everyday Innovator conversation soon. In the meantime, if you got a nugget of value out of this podcast, let Tamara know by leaving a 5-star review and comment. Your review equals more guests, more listens, bigger impact. Until next time.